Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2014. Lecture 18, delivered on April 1, 2014. The title of this lecture is Degrees of Leverage.
Today, leverage. Now, the term leverage in finance actually is similar to the term as it is used in physics. A lever is a way that, for example, instead of just picking you up and, you know, holding you up in the air and looking proudly at you while music plays in the background and we swirl around and all, why wouldn't I just put a fulcrum down and put a nice long plank and have you stand on the short end and I can push and I can lift you up a lot more easily that way? That's obviously, there's not that human interaction, the love, but I can still lift you up a lot more easily that way. Leverage in physics is that. Leverage in finance is similar. It's the use of funds to magnify the effect of the money that you invest. Remember I told you there's an important term in finance that you probably don't see in any finance book that I've ever run into, a finance textbook. It's OPM. Sir, do you know what remember what OPM is? That's good. Other people's money. You see, because if I use other people's money, one of the most important things about using other people's money is it's not your money. That's really important. So that if that money goes away, you mess up, you know, you can. All you have to say is my bad. You know, you can still eat. It's the other people who don't get to eat. Now, if they're the wrong kind of people, they can make it so that you'll eat out of a bag in the side of your stomach. But you know, there you go. Let me show you something about what we call the gains to leverage. Let me take an example. Now, you are looking at buying a really nice place to live. We're talking a house trailer, okay? Double wide, in Decatur. And you, sir, are actually thinking about the same thing. A double wide trailer in Decatur. Double wide because you have a double wide girlfriend. And clearly, you want to live the dream. Both of you do. Now, you, let's say that you both want the price that you're going to pay for it is going to be for guy one is $100,000. And the person, guy two, well, he'll pay $100,000 as well. Now, you're the kind of person, you know finance, and you go to the bank and you say, well, I want to borrow $90,000 of this, and I'll put down $10,000 of my own money. So the equity and the debt combination is $90,000 and $10,000. Now, you, on the other hand, are one of those people, I don't take on debt. I saw what happened. You know, my dad took on debt, and then he couldn't pay it back, so now he's in debtor's prison. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to pay all, I screwed this up. The equity part is the $10,000 for guy one, and the debt part is $90,000, guy two. Okay, now, guy two, the equity part is the full $100,000, and the debt part is zero. Now, let's say you borrowed the money for your house trailer at, oh, let's say, 8%. Now, that only applies only to you because you don't have to worry about debt. You have no payments and all that. Okay, but really, the two of you are a little smarter than just the average bear. You are, neither of you plans to stay there more than a year. You're going to sell your house trailer because you are under the belief that prices are going to rise. The house trailer market is hot in Decatur. It is a big, huge market. Everyone wants to live in a house trailer. So you both plan in a year to sell, and you've projected that you will be able to sell your house trailer for, in 1 year, exactly 1 year, of $110,000. Here's where you're going to see the gains to leverage. Let's see what happens with guy two first. It's almost obvious. So, he's going to sell his house trailer for $110,000. He paid $100,000 out of his pocket, so he made $10,000 on an investment of $100,000 in equity. He'll earn 10%. Well, it's obvious, duh. Let's look at what happens to you. At the end of the game, you're going to pay $110,000. You're going to get $110,000. Now, you had to pay interest on that $100,000, 8%. So you're going to have to pay $8,000 in interest on your loan. Yeah? Yeah. Well, he's got to pay off the loan, $90,000, and the 8%, which is the next step I was going to do, is $90,000. He has to pay the interest on $90,000, and he has to pay the $90,000 back. Okay? You follow me on this. Did I screw up on $100,000 on? Oh, that's right. Duh. See, I'm just testing your ass to watch what you're doing. $7,200. Yeah, I have ruined more people. More people have made financial disasters in their lives because of my arithmetic. Okay, so now he's lost the $110,000. He paid back the $90,000, so that's $20,000. And then he also paid $7,200 in interest, so that would be $12,800. Is that right? Is that right for that? Okay. Anything else? Did I miss anything else? Oh, boy, that pisses me off. I mute it. Oh, you don't want that muted. You've got to have that on. Okay. Did I miss anything else? Or is that it? Okay. He paid the $90, paid the $7,200, okay? And he paid out of his pocket the $10,000. That was his equity kicker into it. So he comes out with a lousy $2,800. Obviously, you were a genius, and he was a fool. How much did he invest in equity? Do you remember? You invested $100,000. How much did you invest of your own money? So in other words, on a $10,000 equity investment, you pulled $2,800. So your ROE, your return on equity was 28%. You made out like a bandit compared to him because you used other people's money. You leveraged your equity of $10,000 with $90,000 of debt. Even paying back the interest, you still made a huge, almost three times as much per dollar as he did. So in other words, suppose that you had had $90,000, but you didn't do what he did and put the money into the house. You had $90,000 more than the $10,000. So you could have bought 10 house trailers, leveraging each one with a loan at 90% of the value, and you would have come out with the same $100,000 with $28,000 if you had used $100,000 borrowing for each house trailer you bought. Do you follow? That's what we mean by the gains to leverage. This was a trick that was used mostly successfully for a number of years by people who used a pool of money and then divided it up and used only a little bit of it for any house that they bought. And they would buy large numbers of houses, finance 90% of each of the houses, and then they would sell them in a year or 2 years, pay off the loans, pay the interest, of course, and all that, and they would come out magnificently ahead. Some people made millions doing that, and they wrote books about doing it. How I made $1 million in our creative real estate financing. It wasn't anything particularly creative about it. All they were doing was dividing up a pool of money instead of using it all to equity invest in one house. They were using just a little bit of their full equity pool for each house and then borrowing most of the rest and then flipping the houses in a year or 2 years. That's how you can make a fortune. It is also how you can take an absolute ass bath. Because what will happen if this $110,000 doesn't occur? If instead the housing market collapses, no one wants a trailer, you just lose some equity, but you still have your house trailer. You actually don't just lose your equity. You don't have a place to live because the bank will repo that house trailer and you'll be out on the street knocking on his door saying, "You got a couch I can crash on?" And he'll say, "No, man," but you'll say, "But I got out of my place, my Velvet Elvis paintings. I'll let you have them." And you say, "Oh, in that case, sure, man. Welcome home, bro." You see, this is the gains to leverage, though. You create more risk doing this, but that's how you create a magnification of return on equity. And this is the whole idea of leverage in finance. You are using debt to magnify your equity. You are using the way you finance to create more value for your shareholders. But the danger is, of course, that as you borrow more money, you have to pay back more money in interest, and that can push you closer and closer to that place where we say times interest earned goes below one. So now, and I am now dead with this marker. You know what? I don't think this marker is going to work. Marker died, and I don't have another marker, so we're going to have to get creative here. We're going to have to get rowdy. I'm going to show you something here. I'll have to switch back and forth to pull this trick, but I can still do it. Let me turn on the projector. Projector on. Is there some reason this sucks? There. Okay, let me turn this off and get this on the document camera so I can show you a couple of things real quick here. Kill this, turn on the document camera, and hope that I've got a piece of paper that I can write on to do what I want to do here. Maybe. Yeah, I do. Okay. Not dead. That's pretty darn murky, but I guess it'll have to do. I can kind of see through to some old paper I had. Let me show you something. This is called degrees of leverage. And I'm just going to give you the formulas first. degrees of leverage. Write the formulas down so that I can switch over to the computer here in a minute. Just the formulas, they're easy formulas to remember. You can write them down on your formula card for the second exam. They're nothing complicated. But they are, in fact, they are simple, but they are quite revealing. Let me start with the names of them. The first one we talk about is the degree of, well, I've got to be careful because I use a slightly... Degree of operating leverage, DOL, degree of operating leverage. Now, I used to have another term for it. If I slip on this, I'm gonna have to watch myself. Okay. This says, all right, let's take the percent change in EBIT from 1 year to the other, divided by the percent change in sales from 1 year to the next. Now, what this is going to do is this is going to capture the magnification of the numbers from sales down to EBIT. It's a quick, dirty way, quite honestly, but it's also an interesting number because what it does, again, is it says, all right, EBIT sales change by a certain amount from year to year. They always do. EBIT changes by a certain amount from year to year. How much more did EBIT change from 1 year to the next than sales changed? So in other words, if my sales increased by 10%, but my EBIT increased by 20%, that would mean that there was a magnification factor of 2. Going from sales down to EBIT. In other words, there was some kind of leverage happening, and in that part of the financial statement, in that part of the income statement, that would have to be an operating. That would have to be your operating expenses that were causing the magnification to happen. Changes in operating expenses. Let me go on here. Then there is the degree of financial leverage. And again, I might not be using the right terms in the book, but you'll see them in there, what they're saying. Now, that would say, what is the percent change in net income against the percentage change over the same period in EBIT? In other words, there's going to be a change from year to year in EBIT. There's going to be a change from year to year in net income. How much more did net income change than earnings before interest and taxes? That would tell me what changes in interest had caused from 1 year to the next. And then finally, there is the degree of combined leverage, DCL. Which says from the top of the income statement to the bottom, we had a change in net income, percent change in net income, over a percent change in sales. What was the combination of the two factors, operating and financial leverage, that caused net income to change by more than sales? Practically speaking, and I'm going to do this on my cell phone here since my calculator's battery was dead. Whoops. Apps. Bear with me, calculator. Okay, now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch over and I'm going to show you Costco's financial statements and see what we can, if we can actually apply this. Those two formulas. There. Let me scroll this down a little bit. And let's look at 2012 versus 2013. Now, in order to do these DCL calculations, what I'm going to have to do is calculate, and I'm going to switch back over here just for a quick second. I don't want to make you start hurling, but I'll have to switch back over here. The thing that you'll... okay. The thing that you're going to need to do, you're going to need to get these three numbers. Do this first. Percent change in sales, percent change in EBIT, and percent change in net income. You have to get those three things. And remember, it's end over beginning, all divided by the beginning for each of them. So keeping those in mind, let me switch back over to Costco. Remember, these are the three that I'm trying to get. I do wish that I hadn't run through my, this would be a lot easier the other way. But let me switch back over here, and we'll have a little lag with the, as it figures out. Really? Come on. There we go. Okay, so now, we're going to need, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to get my percent change in sales from 2012 fiscal to 2013 fiscal. So that would be 105,156. Minus 99,137. All of that divided by 99,137. And so my degree, my percent change in sales, I'm sorry, percent change in sales comes out to be 6.07%. Do you get that? Okay. Write that down, 6.07%. Okay, so now, the next thing I'm going to do is get my percent change in earnings before interest and taxes. And if you look around, it's right there, earnings before interest and taxes. So now I can say, okay, the percent change in EBIT would be 3,150 minus 2,862. Wait, 2,862. All of that divided by 2,862. And I get a 10% change, a 10.06% change in EBIT. Do you see that? Do you see that the EBIT changed by more than the sales? The sales generated everything below it, but somehow there was a magnification. Now let's go down and get the net income on Costco. Now if I go down to net income on Costco, I will, net income, yeah, it doesn't matter which one of those, they're the same number. Those two. So I'm going to take for the, to get the percent change in net income, I'll go 2039 less 1709 divided by 1709. Wow. What did you get for the change in net income? Oh. 19.31. Look at that. That is a serious magnification going down the line. That's all you have to do with the financials. And I'll tell you, on the on a quiz or a test, you're going to calculate these DOLs, DCLs, and DFLs and all that, and you'll find that it's actually quite simple to do that, to look at the financials and get this information. Now let me switch over to the document camera so we can finish this up and get this nice thing over with here. Okay, DOL, the degree of operating leverage would be the percent change in EBIT, 10.06%, over the percent change in sales, 6.07%. Survey says 10.06 divided by 6.07. A 1.66 times. The operating leverage magnified sales by 1.66, about 1 2/3 times. Now the financial leverage would be the percent change in net income, 19.31%, divided by the percent change in percent change in EBIT, which was 10.06%. So if I do that one, I'll get 19.31 divided by 10.06 equals a 1.92 times. And then finally, from the top to the bottom, how much magnification happened? And if I do that one, I'm going to get percent change in net income, 19.31% over 6.07%. Okay. 19.31 divided by 6.07 equals 3.18 times. Now let me explain. See that 3.18? Practically interpreted and getting to the bottom line, what this means to a business. Every change of $1 in sales created a $3.18 change in profit. That's what that means. And that we care about. Now I know. If my sales change by a dollar from one year to the next, that will translate into a change in my profit, my net income, of $3.18. That is leverage, lifting you up with less force than I would need if I actually just did dollar for dollar. Revenue is profit. That's not how it works in a business. It actually, there's leverage going on, and there are two places leverage is going on. Let me show you something here. There's a kind of an interesting thing. Algebraically, if I took DOL times OF, that would be percent change in EBIT over percent change in sales times percent change, DFL, percent change in net income divided by percent change in EBIT. DOL times DFL is percent change in EBIT divided by percent change in sales times percent change in net income divided by percent change in EBIT. Now watch. The EBITs cancel, so DOL times DFL is percent change in net income over percent change in sales. But that is the degree of combined leverage. In other words, the combined leverage is the product, the multiplication of your financial leverage and your operating leverage. That is important. That's important. And here's why. Look at this company again. Now, you can test this. Take DOL, 1.66. You might get a little rounding error. Don't sweat that if it's not perfect. Times 1.92 times. And if you do those two together, make sure you hope that that's going to come out to be what you want it to be, 1.66 times 1.92. 3.19. I'll be darned. Oh, well, it comes out to be 3.19, not 3.18. But like I said, that's rounding. Don't sweat that too much. And it's okay just to round everything to two decimal places to keep this easy all along the way. Okay, here's what this says. Look, do you see this 19.3? That's not what I want. Oh, right up here. Do you see this combined leverage? $1 change in sales magnified to become $3.18 change in profit. That's pretty stiff stuff. The question, though, is, okay, we've got overall with Costco actually quite a bit of magnification from the top to the bottom. That's serious. A buck in change in revenue, a buck change in sales turns into $3.18 in change in profit. That's pretty good. The question then, what was the driving factor? I can now look. Was it our operating actions or was it our financing actions that did it? Not all companies, but a lot of companies, when they're talking about capital structure, one of the ways that they approach it is to say, we would like to have these two guys in a balance against each other. Not too much of one and not too much of the other driving our overall magnification. The overall magnification is going to happen because of the result of both of these acting together. But in this case, do you see that there is a little bit more of an imbalance toward their financial leverage? That's what's driving this company's magnification. It's also explaining why Costco has a strong return on equity. Essentially, it's that gains to leverage from financing that I was talking about with the house trailers. This company, Costco, is doing quite well for its shareholders, primarily because it is leveraging debt. It's using a lot of debt, at least a lot compared to its operating asset base, and that's what's causing it to be a company that is attractive. But that would also make it a company that is riskier. Because remember that if Costco's sales go up by $1 million, its profit goes up by $3.18 million. That's great. Isn't that great? But if its sales go down by $1 million, it goes into the toilet that much money as well. It drops by by about $3 million, a little more, $300,000 or more. So this is a sort of an up and down thing, because sure, yeah, in good times, this company is going to really do well for its shareholders. That net income, that residual is going to that's available to shareholders is going to be quite a magnification of the sales changes. However, if times get bad, the same process that drove the ROE upward is going to drive the ROE downward really spectacularly in a company like this. So the company is making a decision about itself. When we finance at these levels and when we have these kinds of leverages, in this case, operating leverage is strong on this company and financial leverage is strong. What we're saying is we're a company that wants investors that are willing to roll the dice, take a little bit of risk. Because if we win at the sales line, we win three times that much at the net income line, and that's the money that's available to shareholders. With the understanding that if we lose at the sales line, our shareholders go down with us on that ship called the Titanic. But you can do this with any finance, with the financial statements of any company, and you will see hidden in the numbers, just do these, and you will see a little window on the management theory. What are we doing? Are we going to play it safe for our shareholders? First of all, are these numbers going to be like near one. Sometimes you'll see these numbers, one or the other, or both of them, actually below one. You see how that would be a very safe company? Because if on the upside, let's say the DCL came out to be 0.80 times. You did that for a company, and there are plenty of companies you'll see that, a DCL. So in other words, a change of a dollar in sales means that net income available to the shareholders changed by only 80 cents. That's actually a safe company. They don't win big if sales go up, but they also don't lose big if sales go down. It would be more likely that would be a company with a beta below one. But if you see, actually Costco is a little bit surprising to me. I like to do these on the fly with you so that I can show you how the thinking goes as I just run along with it. I saw another company, there was a DCL, and I actually did it twice just to make sure I didn't make a mistake. I think it was something like 5.21 times. Holy cow. What was also interesting was that it was the DOL was about 1.2. It was the DFL that was just sky high. This is a company that is using large amounts of debt in its capital structure to the purpose of creating massive gains to leverage. That company, so far, that company is doing very well. Its sales are just going up, up, up every year. And so, of course, it is just an awesome investment because if you invest in that, the shareholders are getting an unbelievable return on equity. But boy, if those sales ever turn the other way, basically the company is so leveraged that a turn of even about 25% in sales, the company is bankrupt. The company is in default because its time and its interest earned right now is so close to one. So it's a balancing act. It's a choice that a company makes. First of all, a lot of companies philosophically like to have these two near each other. But you'll see companies that don't. And you'll see companies that don't, and they deliberately don't. You'll see other companies that don't, and they'll say in their financial statements or in their disclosures on Form 10-K, we are going to issue equity to rebalance our capital structure away from debt. They'll just say, we're going to do a public offering of stock, not because we really need the money so much. We've just got to get our debt level down, and that's because this one has come up too high, and we don't like that because that's putting our shareholders in a risky position that we don't want them in. Other companies will just, they'll just go right after it and say, yeah, we're going to make this one go way up. We're going to have hardly any operating assets whatsoever. We're going to have a very small staff. We're going to have very few buildings. And we're just going to ride the internet and we're just going to magnify earnings like a boss. So there you are. It's just a management theory. Now, I brought up this again. Capital structure. And I'll just give you the straight up definition. The combination of debt and equity. Capital structure. The combination of debt and equity. A company uses to finance its assets. The combination of debt and equity that a company uses to finance its assets. Now, I want to make sure that you understand that I could very well put this as one of the essay problems on my next test. What is capital structure? Now, you can answer it by looking on the internet, going to Investopedia or Wikipedia or Stupidopedia. Now, what's going to happen to you if you go there and find out what capital structure is?
I could get the wrong answer.
And why would you get the wrong answer? Because Phineas is answering your question. You remember my cat Phineas? Yes. He is waiting for you. He knows that this is a capital structure lecture. He's waiting he's there for you. Or you could answer it by just what I said here, and you'll get a perfect score on it. Capital structure is a combination of debt and equity a company uses to finance its assets. And remember, you can either listen to me or you can listen to my cat, Phineas. It's your call. That's all I have for you. Go home.